Well, we continue to think about how we can be steadfast and immovable. And I was thinking about Jesus, the things that he faced, the things that he had to deal with. I'm not sure that I could have remained steadfast if I had to deal with those things. But he did. He faced Satan one-on-one in the garden. And we read this morning about the different temptations that Satan placed before him. He was hungry. He said, turn these stones into bread. Jesus said, no. He took Jesus up on the pinnacle of the temple. He said, cast yourself down. God won't let you be hurt. Jesus said, no. And then I think in some ways, at least in my mind, one of the hardest temptations that he had to face is recorded for us in the fourth chapter of the book of Luke. It's the temptation that we saw this morning. Satan took him up on a high mountain. He said, all you have to do is bow down and worship me. I'll give you the glory of all these kingdoms. I have to think that Satan had that in his power. Jesus knew he was here to rule over all the earth. Satan said, you can do that. You don't need the cross. And I know how difficult that cross was. I can read about it in the garden, how he was so afraid of dealing with that cross that he sweat as it were drops of blood. But Jesus said, I will worship and serve only God. Worship is only for God. If you think about it, there are times when people wanted to worship something other than God. And we think about idols and how sometimes people were moved to bow down before idols. In the 14th chapter of the book of Acts, beginning at verse 8, reading down through verse 15, you see Paul and Barnabas. They've been preaching the gospel. They've worked a marvelous miracle. And people said, you're gods. They wanted to bow down and worship Paul and Barnabas. And Paul and Barnabas, of course, said, no, we're men. Worship is not for us. Worship is only for God. Acts the 14th chapter, beginning at verse 8. And in particular, notice verse 15. Paul said, sirs, why do you these things? We're men of like passions with you. We bring you good tidings that you should turn from these vain things to a living God. Worship men. Worship is not for men. And angels, people would worship angels. Now they're higher than men. That's worshiping a being who is beyond us. In the 14th chapter of the book of Deuteronomy, Moses recounts the giving of the law to the people of Israel. And he reminds them, don't make an idol that's like an animal or even an angel. He calls them the hosts of heaven. Don't give worship to angels. Colossians, the second chapter, at verse 18, Paul says, let no man rob you of your prize by a voluntary humility and worshiping of the angels, dwelling in the things which he hath seen vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind. Don't worship angels. They're higher than you, but they don't deserve worship. Revelation, the 22nd chapter, we see John in heaven, at least in a vision. John has shown marvelous things throughout the entirety of the book of Revelation. And after all of these things, John wants to worship the angel that showed it to him. The angel said no. Revelation 22, verses 8 and 9. The angel said, see that thou doest it not. I am a fellow servant with thee and with my brethren, the prophets, with them that keep the words of this book. Worship God. I'm just a servant. Worship God. We do not get to worship God as if he needed anything. Acts, the 17th chapter, verses 24 and 25. The Apostle Paul is in the city of Athens, and he's explaining to them that they need to understand who the real God is. He says, the God that made the world and all things therein, he being Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands, neither is he served by men's hands. What did Jesus say? Worship the Lord your God, and him only are you to serve. But God's not served by men's hands as though he needed anything. He gives to all life and breath and all things. How are we going to serve God? Well, I began to think about this, and the first thing I did was I looked at Luke, the 4th chapter. There are two words there. I hadn't kind of recognized that before. The first word is worship. That's what we do with God. God is above us. We want to worship him. He is of superior rank. He is of ultimate rank. So I would worship God. It means to kiss the hand toward. And then he says, serve God. So I worship. We understand that pretty well. But serving God. Thayer says it means to serve, to minister to, either gods or men. And it's used alike of slaves and freemen. I get to serve God. It's a word that's used of priests. That's interesting. To officiate, to discharge the sacred office. So I began to think about priests. What exactly did priests do in the Old Covenant? I have the impression that when a person wanted to make a sacrifice, that he brought his lamb to the priest, and then the priest took the lamb, went behind a curtain somewhere, and took care of making the sacrifice. You know, that's not the way it worked. I have read in different places that when a person wanted to make a sacrifice, he chose a lamb, and that lamb was probably one that lived in his house. There was a very close relationship between animals and family in this agrarian society. So this man would go downstairs in his house, probably where the animals lived, and he would pick out the lamb that he was going to sacrifice. Then he'd take it to the temple. And this is the way that the Passover lamb was killed. This is from the Jewish Encyclopedia. I figured if I was going to read something about the way Jews did things, I ought to get something that was written by the Jews. The killing took place in the court of the temple and might be performed by a layman. So I could kill my own lamb, although the blood had to be caught by a priest. And rows of priests with gold or silver cups in their hands stood in line in front of the temple, a temple court where the blood was to be sprinkled on the altar. The cups were rounded on the bottom so they couldn't be set down, for in that case, the blood might coagulate. The priest who caught the blood before or as it dripped from the victim. Now remember, the person brought his lamb. He's killed his lamb. The priest who caught the blood as it dripped from the victim then handed the cup to the priest next to him, receiving from him an empty one. And the full cup was passed along the line until it reached the last priest who sprinkled its contents on the altar. The lamb was then hung on special hooks and skinned. But if the eve of the Passover fell on the Sabbath, the skin was removed only down to the breast. Then the abdomen was cut open. The fatty portions intended for the altar were taken out, placed in a vessel, salted, and offered by the priest on the altar. Priests served God by helping others serve God or worship God. In 2 Samuel, the ninth chapter, beginning at verse 1, you read about David as he becomes king. And he asks a question: is there anyone left in the house of Saul that I can show kindness to? Saul is dead. So it's a surprising question, because Saul had been trying to kill David. David ascends to the throne, and he finds out that there is a son of Saul who is still alive. His name is Mephibosheth. And David calls Mephibosheth's servant to him. Mephibosheth, it appears, is lame and he can't walk. So David says he wants to serve Mephibosheth out of respect for Saul. David didn't do this because he was such a nice person and Mephibosheth was lame. He did it out of kindness for Saul's son, Jonathan. He served Mephibosheth for a reason. 1 Peter, the fourth chapter, beginning at verse 8. Peter says, "The end of all things is at hand. Be ye therefore of sound mind. Be sober unto prayer. Above all things, being fervent in your love among yourselves." Love covers a multitude of sins. Using hospitality one to another without murmuring, according as each has received a gift, ministering it among yourselves as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. God gives us grace, and then we honor God by serving one another. Proverbs, the 14th chapter, verse 31. He that oppresses the poor reproaches his maker. That's the kind of the flip side of this coin. If you mistreat the poor, you are mistreating God. And you thought it was just mistreating the poor. He that has mercy on the needy honors him. Proverbs, the 19th chapter, verse 17. He that hath pity on the poor lendeth to Jehovah. Does God need money? No. The Apostle Paul was right. He's not served with men's hands as though he needs anything. But he that lendeth to the poor lendeth to Jehovah. And his good deed will pay him again. Matthew, the 10th chapter. Look at what Jesus said. He that receiveth you receiveth me. He that receiveth not, that receiveth me receives him that sent me. What we do in service to other people is in fact serving God. He that receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. He that receiveth a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive of a righteous man's reward. And whosoever shall give to drink unto one of these little ones a cup of cold water only in the name of a disciple, verily I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward. We serve. And for the most part, what we do in service isn't a big thing. Just a cup of water to somebody that needs a drink. We're serving God. Matthew, the 23rd chapter, or 25th chapter, excuse me. Beginning at verse 14, passage we're all familiar with. In the judgment, Jesus says, I was naked, you didn't give me clothes. I was thirsty, you didn't give me a drink. I was sick, you didn't come and visit me. I was in prison, and you didn't come and see me. And those people that are gathered there that are on their way to torment said, Jesus, we never saw you hungry or thirsty or naked or in prison. And look at what Jesus says. If you didn't do it unto one of mine, you didn't do it to me. I don't want to stand with those people and say, I would have done it if I'd seen you hungry. It doesn't work that way. Now, there are some characteristics that we can talk about that are associated with meaningful service. So let's just think about a couple of those. The first characteristic of meaningful service is that we're serving other people out of what God gives us to use to serve other people. It's not that I am so great. And Lenny talked about that this morning. When the Apostle Paul and Barnabas went to Jerusalem, they told the whole church about all the great things that God had done with them. It was like, let me tell you about the great thing God did, and I got to be there. I recede into the background. It's serving other people out of what God gives us. 2 Corinthians 8, beginning at verse 1. Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God, which has been given to the churches of Macedonia, how that in much proof of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded unto the riches of their liberality. For according to their power, yeah, I bear witness, yea, beyond their power, they gave of their own accord, beseeching us with much entreaty in regard to of this grace and the fellowship in the ministering to the saints. Not as we hoped. But here's the characteristic. They first gave themselves to the Lord. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 6, beginning. This I say, he that soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly. He that soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Let each man, according as he has purposed in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. God is able to make all grace abound unto you, that you always abounding in, or all having always sufficiency in everything, may abound unto every good work. God gives us the means that we use to serve other people. It's an unfeigned service. There's nothing phony about it. There's nothing fake about it. There's nothing about it that screams, the only reason you're helping me is so I'll help you when you have need. 1 Timothy, the first chapter, beginning at verse 3 and reading down through verse 11. At verse 5, in specifics, he says, the end of the charge is love out of a pure heart and a good conscience and faith unfeigned. Jesus kind of explains this in a parable in Luke, the 14th chapter. He's talking to one who's asked him to come to a feast. He said to him, when you make a dinner or a supper, call not your friends, nor your brethren, nor your kinsmen, nor your rich neighbors, lest haply they also bid thee again, and a recompense be made unto thee. I'm nice to people that can be nice to me. When you make a feast, bid the poor, the maimed, the lame, the blind, and you'll be blessed, because they have not wherewith to recompense thee, for thou shalt be recompensed in the resurrection of the just. Serve. And this one really kind of gets me. It needs to be timely. In Proverbs, the third chapter, verse 27, beginning, he says, withhold not good from them to whom it is due, when it is in the power of thy hand to do it. Say not unto thy neighbor, go and come again, and tomorrow I'll give, when you have it by you. I fall short here. There was a time when some folks that worshiped with us were receiving hospice care. Now, I have to tell you, I don't like going to hospitals. It's probably my least favorite thing. Hospitals just have a way of kind of freaking me out. And they, to go see them was always on my list. I make a list of things I have to get done today. Then I show it to Kim and she adds things to it. It was always on my list. But it was always at the bottom. I finally got around to going to see them. And when I inquired what room they were in, the nurse at the front desk said, oh, they died. I'd let them down severely. 2 Chronicles, the 24th chapter at verse 5, is a record of the rebuilding of the temple and the restoration, I shouldn't say, not rebuilding, but the restoration of what the temple should have been. It had been degraded because Israel had had, or Judah had had, terrible kings, and they had done despicable things. And then they had a good king. And this good king wanted to rebuild what had been torn down. So he gathered together the priests and the Levites. He said to them, go out to the cities of Judah, gather of Israel, of all Israel, money to repair the house of your God from year to year. See that you hasten the matter. This is important. You know what their response was? The Levites hastened it not. It doesn't say they didn't do it. It doesn't say they dismissed the idea. It doesn't say that they refused to go. It just says there was no sense of urgency. So they didn't do it. I have a feeling when they got around to it, it was too late. I will be steadfast like God. I will be always abounding in the work of the Lord. My labor is not wasted in the Lord. I will serve only God. I'll give him worship. I do that in an assembly like this. I serve. When we leave this place, and I provide food for someone that needs food. Well, we're going to think about it. We're going to sing a song with Ted. Is your heart right with God? We all have to answer that question, don't we? Sometimes it's not. Sometimes we need to vow that we will correct what's missing in our lives. It may be that we need to put on Jesus. It may be that we've never done that, and that's our need. We'll help you do that. Baptism. You can put on Jesus. You can become one of his. More than likely in this assembly, it's not that someone needs baptism. We need to dedicate ourselves to serving God. Pray, ask for God's forgiveness. He's promised he would forgive. He'll uphold you, and we'll be right there with you, helping you in every way that we can.